Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.
There are clearly times when God is deciding things long before we have a chance to anticipate it. Roberta and I worked on what the sermon topics were going to be in September last May. And we went looked through the readings for the year and selected James 3 to talk from back in May. And one of the things about it is that it tells us about the power of the word and how words can be both good and bad. Frankly, between the call to worship, for 1,000 tongues to sing, the piece of music that the praise band sang, what we just sang from the anthem, we've preached the sermon. I'm gonna go on overkill a little bit here and come back and reinforce some of those themes. But what James is addressing is the fact that we can use words, we can use our mouth in both a good way, a positive way, or we can also sometimes use it in a less positive way, a negative way. The irony, the humor, for us ought to be the fact that this was a week that I frankly spent an awful lot of my leadership time focusing on words that had been used in a less than constructive and less than helpful way. And so it helped, this particular text helped me get to a better place. I'm going to be reading from James 3, verses 1 through 12. It's page 230 in your Pew Bibles. And as is my style, I will occasionally step back and make a remark or two. When my words do not match with what you're reading up there, it's Dennis. When the words that I'm reading up there match what's projected, I hope it's James. We'll see. James chapter 3, verse 1 through 12. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us make many mistakes. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. Then he offers this illustration about how we keep a horse in check. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole bodies. And he offers a second illustration about a rudder. Look at ships. Though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder, wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire! And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body. A couple of weeks ago, I read from James 1, where it focused on not becoming stained by the world. Last week, I came back to that theme and talked again to it. It's obviously an important idea to James that this idea of being stained by the world is part of what forms his theology. Sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. For every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creatures, can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. And this bothers James. This bothers James a lot. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. This is the word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Amen.
The late Philip Seymour Hoffman played in a movie called Doubt a character called Father Flynn. The doubt exists at a couple of levels. One level Father Hoffman a potentially exploitive priest in this parish that he has there? And that's one level of the doubt that goes on. One level of the doubt is the fact that the character played by Meryl Streep has introduced into this concern about his leadership, of how it is that he is dealing with the accusation or the possibility that there may be something going on and his lack of response to that. And she sets in motion some conversations that cause you to doubt his ability to perform as a priest in this particular congregation in New York. It's set in the 1960s is when it's set. Father Flynn tells his story one Sunday morning during a sermon, and he has this lady theoretically come in and see a character named Father O'Rourke. And Father O'Rourke listens to the confession, and she says, "Forgive me, Father, I have sinned, I am a gossip." And Father O'Rourke says to her, "Bless you, my daughter, you are healed." And then he tells her what she needs to go do. She was probably expecting, go say 10 Our Fathers and 10 Hail Marys, but he doesn't do that. He instead says to her, go back home, get a feather pillow, and go up on the roof of your house and take a knife and cut that feather pillow open and shake it and shake it and shake it. She says, "Okay, I'll go do that." He says, "And once you've done that, come back and see me." So she goes and does exactly what he tells her to do. And she comes back and says, Father O'Rourke, I have done exactly what you told me to do. I have shaken all those feathers out of that pillow." He says, "Good. Go back up on the same roof now and gather in every pillow, every feather." And she says, "I can't. I don't know where the wind has carried it." He said, "That's gossip." The events of this week were not entirely driven only by gossip, but it's a great illustration for helping us understand sometimes the power of uncontrolled words and how those words can sometimes lead to problems or lead to, as in the case of the movie, setting up doubt. I wish I could say to you that the problem that James is outlining here, James the brother of Jesus, James preaching to a congregation probably in Jerusalem, but Paul in his book of Romans will experience the same kind of conversation. Paul, when he sometimes launches into some of his critiques, some of his observations about the world around him, he'll go into long lists. We've seen them. We've read them in Paul. He'll talk about people in many terms, multiple terms, and just have a string of these things over and over and that are sort of related kind of phenomenons. But to be for a gossip, Paul in Romans 1:27 simply says, "They are gossips." He's willing to isolate it all by itself and make it something that is so destructive and so problematic. Paul would have to deal with that in his church in Corinth and the church in the region in Galatia, what we now call Turkey. I wish I could say to you that gossiping was a contemporary issue, or maybe an issue I wish we could say it was a contemporary issue, but it's not. It's not. I mean, King David in his Psalm, some 3,000 years ago, in Psalm 143, would say, "Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth." keep watch over the door of my lips. Anybody here ever regret having said something about somebody else or something where you issued an intemperate word? Anybody here ever not do that? Good. We're all sort of in the same boat. Goes back to that comment from a couple of weeks ago. We've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. John Wesley would say to you, we should be rigorous in judging ourselves. We should be rigorous in judging ourselves and gracious in judging others. I'm now going to sort of give you my, sometimes you come back from the summer, what did you do over the summer vacation? I'm going to give you a little, what did I do over the last week kind of story, okay? Because I think it's relevant and it helps us understand this passage and how the Bible is not an abstract document. It's not an abstract document that only talks to us about things that happened 2,000 years ago. Rather, it's a document, a book, giving us ancient words that tells us a lot about now. It tells us very much about how to live in this now, in this place. Now, for those of you that know something about scouting, and I noticed that at least several of them are isolated over here, but if you know anything about the scouting ministry here at the church, I want you to do me a favor. Do me a big favor. As I start talking and offering an illustration or two, can you do me a favor and don't try to link up the character that I'm describing there with a real person? You'll be missing my point if you do that, all right? The second thing I would ask you to do is to keep your listening here moderated. I asked the people at the 9 o'clock service, did I chew people out? And they said, no, I didn't. Hopefully I'll do the same thing here at 10:30. But please don't go running out of here and say that Pastor Shaw really chewed out the scouts, particularly those who disagreed with him. Hopefully I'm not using that. Part of the dilemma you have with this kind of moment is that I'm engaging in a monologue. And so sadly, at times, these kinds of conversations need to be a dialogue. But I'm going to try to engage a little bit in a monologue here and see if I can explain the story of what happened. We changed leaders in the scout troop about 3 years ago. I'm a football fan. A big football fan, and one of my favorite teams used to be the Denver Broncos. They have a guy playing cornerback right now, a man who's been in prison about four times and seems completely unredeemed. I'm not sure I'm going to ever root for them again, but nonetheless, I used to pull for the Broncos, and their star quarterback was a man named John Elway, fantastic football player. And he retired, and a man named Brian Greasy took over for John Elway. The primary sin that Brian Greasy committed was that he wasn't John Elway. The primary sin that the new scoutmaster had here as a leader was he wasn't Doug Orr. Doug Orr led that troop for 22 years fantastically, did a great job. But there was constant carping in the background. People kept saying, well, the scoutmaster ought to do this, or the scoutmaster ought to do that, all right? I was mindful of that carping. I knew it was going on. I confess I didn't do anything to stop it, to quell it, beyond just simply trying to continue to put faith in the scoutmaster. Now, as I say with the next thing here, I don't want you to think, I want you to just sort of take it in context. And don't be overly judging, but I've got a reason for communicating it. The scoutmaster had colon cancer in February. And on Tuesday, 2 weeks ago, he had his 11th of 12 colon cancer chemotherapy treatments. 11th of 12. He's been suffering from colon cancer for a while. One of the other assistant scoutmasters has been dealing with a personal crisis of his own, so two of the primary three leaders were either dealing with a personal issue or were dealing with chemotherapy itself. I don't say that to offer an excuse, just to help you understand the context of what was going on. Well, a body of people began to be dissatisfied with the leadership within the troop. Some of it was valid. Some of it was, I think, a lack of assistance going on to help the leader get to a better place, using the mouth to coach him to success, if you will. And they surprisingly scheduled an agenda item that was, they put an agenda on the item at the meeting for the purposes of removing two people, the scoutmaster and the committee chair that overwatches the scoutmaster. And they did it. They did it at 7 o'clock for a meeting starting at 7 o'clock. It wasn't announced in advance. And the people who knew it was going to happen were the people that were dissatisfied. The people that were satisfied with the performance, or at least could see that he would grow, were not told about this. It was not transparent, and so consequently, the anti-group, the anti-party, had 100% of their members there. And the pro-party only had about 40% of their members there. And they used that power to enforce two resignations, and a third person resigned in protest. And part of the run-up to this, and part of the back from this, a person who had been in the troop for 4 months, how many months? Sat down with me and said the following words. This is exactly the way troop leadership was changed here at Hilltop 25 years ago. I don't know about you guys. I don't know about you, but when I heard that, I'm thinking there's been some gossip going on here somewhere. There's been gossip going on in the background. How can a person who's been here 4 months know anything at all about a change in leadership that occurred 25 years ago? All right? I sat down and listened to this, worked with it for about 6 or 7 days. I will say to you that the Great Salt Lake Council shone. They shined in how they helped. I would send them a text message, and 15 minutes later, I've got an answer back. I was able to talk to the senior executive for the Great Salt Lake Council. I wasn't talking to some assistant to an assistant to an assistant. I was talking to the senior executive. People were telling me, well, you should call blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, I talked to Mark Griffin. They said, you talked to Mark Griffin? Well, then that's it. You talked to the head man himself. They did great work for us. It took me a while to understand what had gone on. It took me a while to understand the authority we had as a chartering organization. It took me a while to let the process that I think I went through. I have a high value for process, okay? I don't think I really understood that until I experienced this. I kept saying to people over and over again, I'm not disputing your outcome. What I'm disputing is the process by which you went to do this. And they kept saying to me over and over again, what we did was done according to the letter of the rules. What we did over and over again, was we did it by the rules. We did it by the rules. We did it by the rules. Show me. And I had said to them very early in this process, if you don't have the authority to appoint, you don't have the authority to remove. And Hilltop is who appoints the scoutmaster. It's not appointed by the troop. We appoint the scoutmaster. The bottom line of all of this is that you, for those of you that saw my letter of last Wednesday, is that what it was, Wednesday? Wednesday, I sent that out and shared with you. Now, you might ask the question, what does James have to do with this? And I think it has a lot. It has a whole lot to do with this. James is driving at a situation in his own context there where people are using words in order to disrupt the situation. And they're using these words calling themselves Christians, calling themselves followers of Christ Jesus in the world. I confess to you that I was looking for the rules that were being used to remove people, that I was looking at them not in isolation, not alone. To me, those rules had two things wrapped around them, and they needed to be understood within the context of these two things. One is the sponsoring organization, the chartering organization's primary value set. Our primary value set is this book. I don't know what Jesus would have done. There's no 11th commandment that says when there's a coup at your Boy Scouts, here's what to do. But it just struck me that Jesus would have been bothered by the lack of transparency, by the gossip that went on, by the conversation that went on, by the lack of kindness that went on, 11 treatments into 12 treatments of chemotherapy. Okay? People undergoing chemotherapy aren't normal. They're not the same place they were before the chemotherapy started. So one, I was bothered by the process, bothered significantly, and I didn't feel like they had wrapped scripture around what they were doing. And the chartering organization has that authority to say, well, I don't think this is what Jesus would have done here. And the second thing I think it bothered me the most is that even for those scouts who profess to be worshiping a God other than the Christ that we, as we understand that Christ, they are called to be reverent, which means that they have to believe in a higher power. And so they say that. And so when they say that, they have this thing called the scout law. And you've heard it. A scout is, will be, one of the words is trustworthy, one of the words is kind. I don't know about you, but when I walk into a staff parish relations committee meeting at 7 o'clock on the first Wednesday of a month, the last thing that I expect is to be presented, when it wasn't on the agenda, is a letter saying, we want you to not come back. We want you to not come back tomorrow, which is what they essentially did. It bothered me. And again, going to the issue of kind. So for various reasons, I just got in the Wayback Machine, and I rolled it back, and partly was because I thought it was what Jesus would have us do, and frankly because I thought they violated the scout oath in what they were doing. I reminded them of their own value set. I don't know if that was the right thing or not. I had a very tense week until I reached the decision. But frankly, since Wednesday, I've been at a real good place. I'm not happy that we had to do it. I cannot emphasize to you strongly enough that I'm not happy we had to do it. But at the end of the day, I think we did the right thing. Had a lot of support, a lot of people talking in the background, a lot of people who used to be in scouting here at Hilltop and are gone. Talked to them on the phone, and they gave me a lot of advice. The Hilltop people, by and large, by the way, were in favor of coaching the Scoutmaster to success. Doing that, that was the model. Very few people here at Hilltop were adamantly in favor of a removal. I have to qualify that a little bit. So what do we learn from that? That's our primary illustration from James. It's an illustration. First, I think that the gospel, the good news, applies in our now. It applies in this now. It helps us understand the way we should be trying to live, and the book that frames our conversation about who we are and whose we are. As I was talking to John Davison this week about it, sometimes we pick this book up as if it's an archaeological item that we study as to the way the world was maybe 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago. Those of you who know me, been here more than once, know that I will often at some point during a sermon say something along the lines of, what does this say to us in the 21st century? That sound familiar? What does this say to us in the 21st century? I will say to you that this particular week and this particular exercise of James being there for me, chosen back in May, by the way, is one of those illustrations that gives us reinforcement for the fact that this stuff is relevant in our world. It's relevant in our world every single day, and we need to embrace it. What was the relevancy here on this? The relevancy here on this, I think, is the fact that words matter. Words matter a lot. You can use words in a way like Martin Luther King used words, and they can raise you up. They can just take you to a higher place. You can see the kingdom from those words. Or you can use the words like perhaps they were used this last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Words used to demoralize. Words used to hurt others. Words used in such a way that people who need to be lifted up are instead dispirited from the exercise. Paul, James ends the message here. James ends the message here by commenting that the places where good water comes should not be a place where brackish water comes. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And what he's basically saying is that those words who sing praises to God, who offer a thousand tongues to sing and offers that up as what we should, how we should be living our lives, is not the place, the origin of those words is not a place for the origin of words that tear down, that do not lift up, that damage other people. Please do not walk out of here today and said, Pastor Dennis chewed out the scouts. I did not. I was forced, frankly, at the end of the day, with choices very similar to Solomon and the baby. At the end of the exercise, we're going to lose some people. No matter which direction we went, we were going to lose some people. What we decided to do in much conversation was move in the direction consistent with the scout law as defined by our defining book, which is, of course, scriptural. What are we going to do with it? Thank you. You guys were paying attention. This is our guiding light. This is our guiding force. Keep asking ourselves whenever we're encountering a situation, what would Jesus do? How would he lead in this kind of situation? And I think when we do that and think that, we'll be fine. When we lose our way on that, we think we have become stained by the world. James would say to us, do everything you can to avoid being stained by the world. Please stand as you are able. I've caught the praise band by a little bit by surprise. They're going to offer us some words about Jesus, which is, we live in a dark world. We live in a world that can be broken. And what they're going to suggest to us to do is to focus on that light that is in the world.
Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.